struck down the warrantless search under a very narrow exception to cell phones. What was interesting there is the court, in reaching its ruling in Riley, was relying on cases that predominantly came out of the 60s, and the most recent case that it relied on involved beepers. I don't know if you even remember beepers, but that was where the law was technologically advanced. The judiciary is not the appropriate part of government to litigate rapidly changing technology issues. It's not equipped to do it. It is too slow to act. That's why a number of state legislatures, as well as the federal government, are looking at legislative changes to prophylactically prescribe this type of governmental activity. That's why this legislature must act. The other reason I would give you, I'd like to read you a couple of quotes here. Preventing searches of cell phones has, quote, little chance of success under the rights-based Oregon constitutional analysis, end quote. And then another quote, simply because you have a vast quantity of items in your pocket does not mean you are entitled to an expectation of privacy in them, end quote. Those are both the official positions as published by the state attorney general's office in cell phone cases that I have litigated against them personally in front of the Oregon Supreme Court. So I know you're going to hear from the attorney general's office later. Any notion that this is not appropriate for a legislative fix is belied by the fact that that same agency has said it is not addressable under the Oregon Constitution.
Gail Meyer, on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, I'll keep my comments brief. What I'd like this committee to appreciate is how the acquisition and the use of these surveillance tools is evading oversight from all three branches of government. The police powers of government is evading the oversight of their own executive branch, meaning county councils, county commissions, because they acquire these surveillance tools through the back door. They don't go to their county council or their county commission and seek permission to acquire this stuff. It comes to them by and through grants through the Department of Justice, could be Homeland Security, but this is coming in through the back door. And this is being used and employed against civilians here in Oregon, and yet there has been no official executive branch governing body that has sanctioned their use. It evades the detection of the judiciary because there are non-disclosure agreements. The agencies, the law enforcement agencies, and make no mistake about it, Oregon law enforcement agencies are using the Stingray. There are non-disclosure agreements as a condition of acquiring the device. And it states right in there, let's see, I have a copy of a non-disclosure agreement when Tucson PD acquired the Stingray. The City of Tucson shall not discuss, publish, release, or disclose any information pertaining to the product covered under this non-disclosure agreement to any third party, individual, corporation, or other entity, including any affiliated or unaffiliated state, county, city, town, or village, or any other government entity without the written consent of the manufacturer. It's also not being disclosed in judicial applications for a search warrant. So in the instance when law enforcement is going to the courts in the context of a criminal investigation and they're applying for a search warrant affidavit, they will commence the search warrant from an objective facts X, and they'll move forward from there. But they don't ever disclose how it is that they learned somebody was in that house at that given date or time. And even when that is being opened up and disclosed in those very rare instances, in some cases across the United States, where defense counsel have been allowed to inquire into that objective fact and how they got that in the affidavit, even then law enforcement agencies and officers are saying, I'm sorry, I cannot discuss that.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Sex Workers film series hosted by the Clinton Street Theater. This month, the film Portrait of Jason will be shown Wednesday, March 18th at 7 p.m. Portrait of Jason was made in 1967 by Shirley Clark in her apartment at the Hotel Chelsea. She filmed Jason Holliday as he spun tales, sang, donned costumes, and reminisced about good times and bad behavior as a gay hustler, sometime houseboy, and aspiring cabaret performer. The result is a mesmerizing portrait of a remarkable, charming, and tortured man, who is by turns hilarious and heartbreaking. Again, that's Portrait of Jason, Wednesday, March 18th at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio invites you to our springtime open house and live in-studio performance of Mama C, Saturday, March 21st from 1 to 5 p.m. Tour the KBOO studios and meet your community. Share refreshments and talk with other listeners, program hosts, volunteers, and KBOO staff. See how our communities intersect and work together to create this amazing community radio station. We'll also have a live performance by Mama C, an accomplished musician, poet, and MC, as well as a former Black Panther and political refugee who fled the U.S. in early 1970s for Tanzania. Again, that's Saturday, March 21st from 1 to 5 p.m., an open house and live performance by Mama C at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, your community radio station, KBOO Portland. We look forward to seeing you.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or RadioCab.net.
Hello there. Welcome to Out Loud, KBOO's queer public affairs show. The time is 6:06. My name is Boston, usually behind the them sliders, but today I am going to be playing some music and then we'll have This Way Out at 6:30. Check out Out Loud on the Facebook. Alrighty, let's get into the music. You're listening to KBOO Portland. We'll be right back.
But no work goes without recognition. You believe when you blink, you think that it isn't seen. Your faithfulness, your dedication. But no work goes without
recognition.
You believe when you blink, you think that it isn't seen. Your faithfulness, your dedication. But no work goes without
recognition.
Thank you.
known would have ever known. My boy was killed, and now he's gone. And I could never go back. No, never get to see him ever again. But I won't forget the time that we got to spend there.
Hey, y'all. That was your evening set of all queer artists. You just heard some Young Witch. At the beginning of the set, we heard Burials in McDonald's, the classic banger from 2006. That rock and roll tune you heard was Hunks and His Punk. Punks. Multiple Punks with an X. We heard the track Lover's Lane from them. What else did we listen to? We heard that psychedelic track from Atlas Sound featuring Panda Bear called Walkabout. The club banger was Foxy Newport with Rebirth. We heard sparkly, clean, brand new T-Satisfaction track Recognition. Second track we heard was Arca's Now You Know. Up next, we have This Way Out.
So ultimately, as Bronson James mentioned to you, in any case across the United States where this has actually come to rubber hitting the road in the courtroom, the government has either dismissed the case or they've given a sweetheart deal that the defense has accepted. And it's also evading detection by and through the legislature. And so I would encourage this committee to make inquiry of the people coming in behind us.
We're not really able to enjoy the fact that we're married because all of our rights were just stripped. And there's so many people who would like to be wed, and that opportunity is no longer there.
We got a bit of ribbon and a bit of humming going on.
I have never seen anything like this.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Peru's Roman Catholic Church pressured Congress kills civil unions. One of Alabama's first married lesbian couples bridges the gap. And hijinks conquer homophobia at Sydney's Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras Parade. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Natalie Peoples.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending March 14th, 2015. Peru's Congress won't be considering a bill to create civil unions for same-gender couples. Again. The latest proposal in the South American nation failed to advance in a legal committee for the second time in 5 years. After a three-hour debate on March 10th, seven members of the Justice and Human Rights Committee voted against the bill. Four voted in favor, and two abstained. The legislation, proposed by outlawmaker Carlos Bruce, faced stiff opposition in a socially conservative country where the Roman Catholic Church still plays a strong role in public and private life. Monsignor Luis Bambaren told Peruvian media that he strongly opposes the legislation, referring to Bruce as a maricón, Spanish for faggot. He himself has said he is gay, he explained. Gay is not the Peruvian word. The word is faggot. Bruce told reporters that the bishop's comments reflect the hate that is typical of homophobia. Congressman Julio Rosas of a right-wing opposition party praised the vote, saying that we have defended the natural family as enshrined and recognized in our Peruvian constitution. Proponents of the legislation say it's just a matter of time before Peru legally recognizes same-gender couples. Lawmakers who voted in favor of the civil unions bill this week said they would resubmit another in the next congressional session. We are on the right side of history, Bruce said, and we are sure that this is going to be approved.
After a year of publicly opposing them, Alberta's progressive conservative government enacted legislation this week to make gay-straight alliances, campus support groups for LGBT students and their allies, mandatory if students request them in all publicly funded schools in the Canadian province. The Tories had previously introduced a controversial bill that would have allowed school boards to reject applications to form such groups. Education Minister Gordon Dirks said he changed his mind on the issue after talking to LGBTI students who had contemplated or actually attempted suicide. When you have those kinds of intimate, frank conversations with students, he said, it goes from your head to your heart. Alberta Premier Jim Prentice called it a case of a government responding to what they are hearing from the citizens of the province, including young people who, he said, have had a significant say in this, who have moved me, and who have moved the minister. The new law will take effect on June 1st.
As Jay Michelson wrote this week at the Daily Beast, mainstream activists are crowing about the Utah Compromise, a law signed by Governor Gary Herbert on March 12th that gives employment and housing non-discrimination protections to LGBT people, but exempts religious organizations from having to comply. It was supported by some LGBT activists and, for the first time, the Mormon Church. Human Rights Campaign legal director Sarah Warbelow called it a landmark law. It was also supported by the National Center for Lesbian Rights and Lambda Legal. But the law exempts anyone who works for a religious organization, such as the cafeteria worker at Brigham Young University or the custodian at St. Mary's Hospital. These are not hypothetical cases, Michelson notes. They are instead wending their way through the courts right now. The Mormon Church has vast holdings in real estate, media, and agribusiness, employing hundreds of thousands of people. Anyone who works for those companies, or the church itself, or any other religious organization, can still be fired for being LGBT under the new law.
But there's no denying a marked change in the Mormon Church's relationship with the LGBT community. It's gone from being a major funder of California's marriage equality banning Proposition 8 to general support for LGBT rights. Considering the state's unique nature, Michelson concludes, the law may work in Utah, but anywhere else, it would be a huge step backwards for civil rights. The legislature also passed a separate bill that allows employees in county clerk's offices to refuse to perform civil marriages for same-gender couples and forbids government agencies from penalizing any business that refuses to provide public accommodations for them.
The Swiss Parliament has approved, by a vote of 103-73 with 9 abstentions, legislation to protect LGBTI people from hate speech and discrimination. The March 12th vote, according to Gay Star News, added sexual orientation or gender identity to an existing anti-bias law that protects people of different races or faiths. Equality activist Barbara Lantheman said that lesbians and gays feel strengthened if they are supported by their state and when the parliament recognizes them as having the same rights as all citizens. While same-gender couples have had limited rights in Switzerland since 2007, a marriage equality bill is also advancing in parliament.
In other news, the Strasbourg, France-based European Court of Human Rights ruled this week that the Turkish government cannot make sterilization a requirement for gender reassignment surgery. An unidentified Turkish trans man brought the Eurocourt case in 2005 after being denied surgery because he refused the required sterilization. A Turkish court did eventually permit the surgery in 2013, but Europe's top human rights court still heard the original case. It awarded him 7,500 euros in damages, taking into account the years he was unable to access gender reassignment. The court wrote that gender identity is an essential part of the right to self-determination. According to the group Transgender Europe, Denmark, the Netherlands, Iceland, Portugal, and Sweden have each liberated their laws in the past few years. But 20 out of the 47 nations that have signed the European Human Rights Charter, including France and Italy, still require people who want to change their legal gender to be sterilized. And while the Eurocourt ruling is at least symbolically significant, countries are not bound by it. Let me put this very clearly, said British Prime Minister David Cameron last year. We do not require instruction on this from judges in Strasbourg. The Eurocourt didn't address other barriers to gender reassignment, such as having to have psychiatric professionals sign off on the request, or other self-realization barriers that critics say pathologize and dehumanize transgender people.
The U.S. Army announced on March 13th that it was elevating authority to discharge transgender service members to the Assistant Secretary for Manpower and Reserve Affairs. According to USA Today, in essence, the announcement places a moratorium on dismissals by requiring officers to explain their decision to discharge a transgender soldier to a high-ranking civilian leader, a move many would view as potentially damaging to their careers. Equality activists are waiting for the other U.S. service branches to follow suit. Soon after replacing Chuck Hagel, new Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter was asked about transgender service. We want to make our conditions and experience of service as attractive as possible to our best people in our country, he said. I'm very open-minded about what their personal lives and proclivities are, provided they can do what we need them to do for us. That's the important criteria. Are they going to be excellent service members? And I don't think anything but their suitability for service should preclude them. Former Army Captain Allison Robinson of the LGBT military advocacy group Sparta said that Carter needs to turn those words into action and order a top-down review to get to a policy that works for our military.
And finally, New York-based upscale retailer Saks Fifth Avenue has thrown in the towel by settling a discrimination lawsuit filed by former saleswoman Laith Jamal. She charged that she had been subjected to harassment and retaliation because of her transgender identity. Jamal's lawsuit claimed that her co-workers at the Saks store in Houston repeatedly referred to her as a man and forced her to use the men's bathroom. A manager suggested that she make her appearance more masculine and separate her home life from work life. Saks fired Jamal in 2012 after she filed a discrimination complaint with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Lawyers for Saks' parent company, Hudson's Bay, had insisted for the past few months that the retailer was entitled to fire Jamal because federal law does not ban discrimination based on gender identity. They confidently promised to prove their case in court. Someone must have finally told the company's management that U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder announced in late December that the Justice Department would henceforth consider bias against transgender people to be violations of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which outlaws discrimination based on sex. Jamal's lawyers filed a stipulation of dismissal of the case with prejudice last week. When asked about the terms of the settlement, one of her lawyers told Fortune magazine that the parties had amicably settled the lawsuit and would have no further comment.
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 14th, 2015. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Natalie Peoples.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
The crowds are gone, but the sounds of this year's Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras Parade reverberate later in the program. But first...
If you think nothing's changed in the past 50 years, ask somebody who lived through the Selma or Chicago or Los Angeles of the 1950s. Ask the female CEO who once might have been assigned to the secretarial pool if nothing's changed. Ask your gay friend if it's easier to be out and proud in America now than it was 30 years ago. To deny this progress, this hard-won progress, our progress, would be to rob us of our own agency, our own capacity, our responsibility to do what we can to make America better.
Civil rights activists who were beaten on Selma, Alabama's Edmund Pettus Bridge in 1965 did not imagine that 50 years later, the first African-American U.S. president would commemorate their march for voting rights, or that a half century would bring Alabama to another bridge to equality. At the historic movement meeting place, Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman found an African-American lesbian couple who were one of the first in the state to marry.
My name is Tori Wolf Sisson, and we're outside of Brown Chapel in Selma, Alabama.
And I'm Shantae Wolf Sisson, and we're here for Selma weekend.
Shantae and Tori, we're here on the 50th anniversary of the observance of Bloody Sunday. People are talking about voting rights, the right to be heard. This also happens to come a few days after the Alabama Supreme Court has put a halt to marriage equality in Alabama. You were the first couple to get married in Montgomery, the first same-sex couple. Your response to this and how it relates to this weekend?
It's really hard to tie it together. They're kind of parallel, but not really perpendicular issues. And considering the fact that now we no other couples can be married. This makes it bittersweet. We're not really able to enjoy the fact that we're married because, one, all of our rights were just stripped, and two, there's so many people who would like to be wed, and that opportunity is no longer there.
Can you talk about marriage equality as an issue of civil rights? Civil rights, which is so much the buzzword this weekend.
Yeah. It's interesting because a lot of the people that want to strip our rights don't really understand what they are. When people talk about marriage equality and same-sex marriages, they think about the sexual nature of it, but they don't really understand what those rights are and what rights we don't have and what rights we're fighting for. So in the state of Alabama, there's no accommodations, protections. There's no people can be fired for being same-gender loving individuals. I'm missing something, I'm sure, but there's so many things that we don't have. And so marriage equality, that means that if one of us goes to the hospital, I would be able to check on her without any issue. If we wanted to adopt, there's laws on the books that you have to be married to have second parent adoptions, and that's part of like the original deal. So it's there's a lot of protections that were not afforded, and people don't understand that when they're trying to deny them.
And looking at it from a civil rights aspect, if you're about liberation, you have to be about liberation for all people. That's the closest that everyone should be able to tie the two together, because often, more so than not these days, people are trying to romanticize, you know, oh, marriage equality is the new civil rights. It is a civil rights issue, but you shouldn't, like, try to replace something that has already happened in history.
Is there any message you'd like to leave with the Alabama State Supreme Court Chief Justice Roy Moore, who told judges not to issue same-sex marriages when it was legal and now, well, has put a halt to same-sex marriage in Alabama?
Let's be clear. For someone with privilege, it makes absolutely no sense to deny anyone else those privileges that you're afforded.
Will you be walking over the bridge today?
Yes.
One of the state's first same-gender marrieds, Tori and Shantae Wolf Sisson, spoke with Amy Goodman before joining thousands to march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge on March 7th in Selma, Alabama.
Brother to brother, brother to brother, brother to brother, brother to brother.
This is Essex Hemphill, reminding you that you've tuned into This Way Out.
Homophobia, turn me around, keep on walking, keep on talking.
Those looking for spectacle at the 2015 Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras Parade on March 7th were not disappointed. The 37th edition of the celebration, with the theme this year of passion, featured everything from the traditional dykes on bikes to more than 150 festively decorated floats, numerous marching units, and a Kim Jong-un impersonator atop a golden tank. Thanks to Australia's all LGBTIQ all the time Joy 94.9, Sydney's 2 SER community radio station, SBS Radio, and the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia, here are snippets from the original 4-hour live broadcast.
Oh my.
Indeed.
Sydney, Australia.
The home of the Opera House and that beautiful bridge.
It's the city on the harbour.
The financial hub of a nation.
Nestled between the golden sands of Bondi Beach in the east.
And those mysterious blue mountains in the west.
Renowned for its King's Cross nightlife.
Those beautiful babes. And how could we forget its manly fairies?
What about all of those men? Welcome to Sydney's Queer Night of Nights.
Welcome to the 37th Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras Parade.
And a very happy Mardi Gras to you. My name is Dean Beck from your host broadcaster, Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. Joining me is the very gorgeous Harry Lloyd.
This is my first ever Sydney Mardi Gras, and I just can't believe the amount of people that have turned out. The colour is just fantastic. I am very excited for tonight, Dean.
Now, tonight's parade takes place on the traditional lands of the Gadigal people, and they are of the Eora Nation. As traditional custodians, they have cared for this land for thousands of years. And we say thank you to them and to their elders, both past and present, for caring for this place.
Hi, my name's Gavin Ivey, and I'm originally from the Minyanbul people of the Bundjalung Nation, which is up around the far north coast of New South Wales. For us, it's the 50th anniversary of the Freedom Rides, which took place back in 1965. And in recognition and acknowledgement and respect of that, we've hired a open-top double-decker bus. So our official theme is Freedom 2015, and that's coincides with the 50th anniversary of the Freedom Rides, and also it's an expression of each participant's personal freedom.
We are joined now by Sophie Lai. She's from 2SER here in Sydney. Sophie, welcome.
Hello, hello, hello.
Oh, James Finlay from Joy 94.9, he joins us.
Thank you very much.
Sophie, you see thousands of people before your very eyes. Describe what you're viewing right this very moment.
It's like Moses has parted away, because there is a crowd on each side, which is the sea, and it's just straight down the bullet. We're just waiting for the parade to come through.
Earlier today, our executive producer, Emily Dwyer, spoke to the creative genius behind the Mardi Gras parade.
The overall theme is about homophobia. And the best way to change a person's mind is to make them laugh and cry, to make them have empathy with you. And that's what we're trying to do, is basically to show the rest of the world that we are daughters, mothers, fathers, brothers. We just like it. We just happen to be gay and lesbian.
And within that anti-homophobia message, there is a real focus on sport.
Sport is one of the last bastions of homophobia. And really what has been amazing is that the big codes, AFL, the rugby union, the rugby league, the soccer, the cricket, all of them have said, we are totally with you in trying to banish homophobia from sport.
That was our executive producer, Emily Dwyer, speaking with Ignatius Jones. He's the creative consultant for the 2015 Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras Parade. Now, Harry, we got a bit of revving and a bit of humming going on.
I have never seen anything like this. Look, there is... Oh, look at that revving! These are my ladies. These are my dykes on my bikes.
So what we're seeing is the dykes on bikes going the wrong way down the parade route. They're coming from the Flinders Street end around down Oxford Street.
Yes.
They will then lead back towards us. So they're going to do a bit of a round trip and they'll start off the parade that way.
In 1978, Sydney was a very different place than it is today. Homosexuality was a crime, and people who were found out to be gay lost their jobs, houses, family and friends because of it.
On the 24th of June in 1978, members of Sydney's gay and lesbian community gathered right here at Taylor Square on Oxford Street in Darlinghurst. Now, having been inspired by a Stonewall in New York, the Sydney Siders wanted to challenge the oppression and discrimination that was being experienced by lesbians and gays locally. People came out of the pubs and the nightclubs, and the numbers grew to more than 2,000 people. Now, this took the police a little bit by surprise, who had given them permission to be on the streets, but they revoked their rights to protest. And what had been a peaceful demonstration quickly erupted into a violent fracas. Some police and many protesters were injured, and some 53 arrests took place on that night. It marked a turning point in the struggle for gay and lesbian rights here in this country.
Coming towards us is a sea of lights. They're the dykes on bikes, but their lights are all represented of the rainbow colours. So at the front we've got red, in the middle we've got amber, green towards the middle, and then coming up just at the back I can see now is blue. It's an absolute
spectacular. It is a sparkling a light show, isn't it?
And the crowd is absolutely loving every single second of waving at them and them driving past. Here they come.
Now, the crowd has been 10 deep even more as we look down across.
Much more.
It's 30 deep. But they have been here since early today. They're lining up from about midday to get the best vantage point. And Taylor Square is the place to be for
absolutely. They've brought their crates on buses, trains, planes, any way they could get their crates to try and see the event.
The 2015 Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras. This is how life goes.
Coming to you perched high above Taylor Square, my name is Harry Lloyd. I am joined by John and Dean Beck.
I think this might be the trans flag, and there's a big group of them here. Now, it's they are the My Body, My Gender. It's the International Trans Friends Group and their friends marching to promote for transgender rights and the rights to have surgery or not. This is a big family's float that's going past. We see a lot of kids, a lot of mums and dads, and we've got Jack.
Yes, James, I have Helen down here with who I assume is her partner.
Jude,
lovely to meet you, Helen and Jude, and you've got a lovely little man on your back here supporting you. How important is it to have floats like this in the Mardi Gras Parade celebrating rainbow families?
Oh, for me, it's just... You just can't describe it. It's just unbelievable. Yeah. Just to have the family there, we're just one.
And Jude?
I've been doing Mardi Gras for, 10, 15 years now. And it means more for me now with kids, but the feeling is great. Just being in it and being part of it, you actually feel like a celebrity for the day.
Yeah, and absolutely amazing. Something to aspire to. Helen and Jude, have a fantastic Mardi Gras. Thank you so much.
Happy Mardi Gras.
The military coming up. This is always a much-loved segment of the parade, recognising our armed forces.
Bit of a fan of men in uniform, are we, Dean?
Oh, I've got to say yes.
Now, who's first, John?
Well, it's the Australian Defence Force. I love this. Let's use this acronym, DEFLIS. Can we do that?
Yeah.
That's the Defence Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, Intersex Information Services, DEFLIS.
Now, they're being led by the piped band contingent of the armed forces, followed by the Navy, resplendent in white. Now, that's their parade uniform. They're, of course, followed by the Army.
Where they come from.
And then the Air Force. Now, hats off to, or hats on in this case during the parade, but otherwise, hats off to our armed forces who right around the world are continuing to protect our freedom. And, Harry, what are we seeing take place before our eyes?
I believe, Dean, we are seeing the finale. The zombies are on the floor. They have just done their big dance number along with the camouflage gang and the bear bums.
So the last four groups that were coming down the parade route have stopped at Taylor's Square, and they've all taken a formation around the square as the zombies have then taken over.
Yep, and Kim Jong-un is on a tank with a penis.
End. You know, gun turret is the word I'm looking
You're
for.
You're going to describe it.
And it is a golden tank.
It is.
Amazing. I don't know how you get one of those when you need one, but they've got one. This is the People's Republic of Mardi Gras. And they've been joined by the Zombie Cafe. It's the end of the world for homophobia. And Queer Eyes for Hairstyles. Now, I'm not sure how they fit it in, but they're there. Now, the People's Republic of Mardi Gras are battling homophobia, which has been the overarching sort of sub-theme to our passion theme for Mardi Gras.
Yep.
The finale is part of the end of the parade. Have a look at the drag queens sweeping the rainbow crossing.
There's four of them all dressed up in their finest dresses, trying to sweep the glitter off the rainbow crossing.
Well, they're all heading off to the Mardi Gras party. The parade has concluded. I want to just say to our street team, congratulations, because you guys rocked tonight. Thanks to the support, the talents, the resources of Sydney's 2SER, a proud partner in real radio, in community radio, with Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Melbourne's Joy 94.9. We thank everyone at SBS Radio, the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia, who helped us bring the colour of the 2015 Mardi Gras Parade to your local community radio station. To Martin and to Danny, thank you very much for your help. Emily Dwyer is our executive producer. Round of applause for Emily. This is the 2015 37th Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras Parade. My name is Dean Beck. Happy Mardi Gras, everyone.
Police estimated the peaceful evening crowd at more than 200,000, the event's largest turnout in years. 30 people were arrested, mostly for alcohol-fueled misdemeanors. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Wenzel Jones and Natalie Peoples contributed program material, with thanks, as always, to Steve Pride. Additional thanks to Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! And to Joy 94.9, 2SER, and the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia. The Morehouse College Glee Club hummed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and you, our listener supporters, for making this program possible. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on CITR Vancouver, British Columbia, Experiment FM, Ames, Iowa, KFAI, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.